dead body. What do you mean? Just as he came back out of the bathroom, he slammed right into that woman.
What woman?
I don't know. She's staying in a room upstairs with a man.
Arlene?
I don't know if that's her name. She obviously knew the killer. Seemed surprised to see him. She asked him what he was doing here.
They knew each other?
He grabbed her by the arms, told her he was taking care of business. Her business. And then ordered her to go back upstairs and go to sleep. Told her that in the morning, she needed to remember to keep her mouth shut, because this would all come back on her if she wasn't careful, and it would ruin everything they were working to accomplish.
What did she do? Danielle asked.
She ran back upstairs after he kissed her.
He kissed her?
Yes.
Did they say anything else?
Not a word. She ran upstairs and he left.
What happened then?
I went back in the front room where Peter Morris was still moaning over his body. A few minutes later, I heard someone walking in the front hall, and then I heard a door on the first floor close.
That must have been Chris returning to his room. Did you go back out into the hall?
Not then. I stayed with Peter Morris for a while. I couldn't help but feel sorry for him. Eventually, he told me his name, and I explained that he was dead. I remembered what Megan had told me, and I suggested he move on. He just kept rambling, not making any sense. I got bored and eventually left him there and then went upstairs, looking for you.
Did you ever see Peter Morris again?
No.
Lucas smiled at Danielle.
Can we talk about us now?
What's there to say?
I still don't understand how the Danielle I knew would trade the life she had in California for this.
He waved his hand, gesturing to the room around him. I guess neither of us knew each other very well.
Downstairs when I saw you earlier with Walt and that other man.
Chris.
This Chris. He could see me, couldn't he?
Yes, Chris can also see and hear spirits, just like me.
So he isn't dead? Like me and that other one?
No, Chris is very much alive.
Who is he to you?
Chris is a friend. He's been staying at Marlowe House.
Lily's here too, isn't she? Lucas asked.
Yes, Lily lives at Marlowe House.
I don't understand. Did she take a teaching job here?
No, Lucas, Lily isn't teaching right now. She had some medical issues and had to give up her class. She's living here right now.
Lucas smiled. One thing hasn't changed about you.
What's that?
You're still taking in strays.
Lucas vanished. 22. Closing her eyes did not help. She still couldn't fall asleep. The fact that Danielle hadn't slept the night before didn't make slipping off to dreamland any easier. Tossing the blanket and sheets aside, she sat up and dropped her feet to the cold floor. Her wiggling toes searched for her slippers and found them tucked just beneath her bed. She stood up and walked to the door, grabbing her robe along the way. Slowly turning the doorknob, Danielle made a special effort to be quiet so as not to disturb the household. For a brief moment, she considered knocking on Lily's door. She needed to talk to someone. But there was no light coming from under the door, and she assumed her friend was already asleep. While Lily would probably be willing to talk, Danielle didn't want to wake the other guests. Since there was no light coming from any of the upstairs bedrooms, she surmised everyone was asleep. Glancing toward the ceiling, she wondered if Walt was in the attic. She could always talk to Walt. Tiptoeing across the hall en route to the attic staircase, she heard muffled voices. They came from Arlene and David's room. Pausing by their door a moment, she could hear arguing. What they were saying exactly, she couldn't hear. Yet she couldn't help but think about what Lucas had just told her about Arlene and Morris's killer. Quietly continuing on her way, she headed down the hall and then up the staircase leading to the attic, treading lightly on the wooden steps, cringing each time her slippered feet made the boards creak. At the top of the staircase, she found the door closed. Just as she reached out to take hold of the doorknob, the door swung open, seemingly of its own volition. But she knew that was not the case. Just as she entered the attic, the door slowly closed behind her.
"I heard you coming up the stairs," Walt said from his place by the attic window.
Max sat on the windowsill looking outside, his tail swishing back and forth. "I tried to be quiet." Danielle walked to Walt.
"Max told me Lucas was here."
"Yes, he was." Danielle looked at Max, who continued to stare out the window, refusing to look in her direction. "Is Max mad at me?"
"Annoyed would be a more apt description," Walt told her.
Danielle reached out to stroke Max's neck, but he jumped down from the windowsill, ignoring her. He strolled away, eventually reaching the sleeper sofa, which he then jumped up on before snuggling down and closing his eyes. "He really is annoyed," Danielle muttered.
"He's a cat. He'll get over it."
Danielle stood next to Walt at the window, looking outside to the darkness.
"Is he gone?" Walt asked.
"I assume you're talking about Lucas?"
"Of course."
Danielle shrugged. "Gone for now, but for good? I've no idea."
"Why is he here?"
"That's what I'm trying to figure out. It seems spirits normally have a reason for sticking around."
Walt smiled in the darkness. "I suppose that's true."
"I wonder if maybe your original suspicion was correct."
"What's that?"
"Maybe Peter Morris is the reason Lucas showed up when he did." Walt turned from the window and looked at Danielle. She continued to stare out into the dark night.
"Why do you say that?"
She let out a deep sigh and then proceeded to tell Walt everything Lucas had told her about what he had seen downstairs at the time of the murder. When she was done, Walt asked,
"Are you suggesting your guest Arlene is in some way involved in the murder?"
"According to Lucas, they knew each other." "Good Lord. He kissed her and sent her back upstairs."
"Yes, and to another man's bed. Odd, this generation of yours."
"I'll have to tell the chief. Let him figure this out."
"Arlene did seem genuinely surprised to see a dead man in the parlor," Walt reminded her.
"True, and according to Lucas, she asked the killer what he was doing here. Maybe she had no idea he'd just killed Morris."
"If that's true, I wonder what she thought when she realized Morris had been murdered."
"Oh, I have a headache," Danielle groaned.
"Of course you do. You need your sleep."
"I've a favor to ask you."
"Anything," Walt vowed.
"Can you keep an eye on Arlene and David? Tomorrow morning I'll call the chief and let him know what I've found out."
"Okay. But you promise me you'll go back downstairs to bed."
"I might as well. I should stop worrying about Lucas suddenly appearing at any moment. It's likely he's moved on."
"Why do you think that?"
Danielle looked up at Walt. "His reason for being here was probably to witness the murder, and since he's passed the information on to me, he can go now."
"You don't honestly believe that, do you?"
"Why not? Why else would he be here? We really have nothing to say to each other."
"To begin with, I don't believe, and I don't think you do either, that spirits generally have clairvoyant powers, especially one who just realized the reality of his existence. I didn't even know who had killed me, so how can you imagine I could predict another person's demise and manage to be there to witness it?"
"That's true. But sometimes there are other forces involved. Something that made sure he'd be here at that specific time."
Walt laughed at the idea. Other forces. Are we talking God, angels, what?
Danielle shrugged.
I find it implausible to imagine some higher being thought it a terrific idea to bring your deceased husband up to Oregon just to have him witness a crime and help you solve a murder.
Then why is Lucas here?
What do you think, Danielle?
She didn't answer.
You, of course, he answered for her. I would say you and Lucas have some unresolved issues, and perhaps it's best for both of you to air them before he moves on, which may enable you to move on.
I can't believe it. You were actually listening to what I had to say? Chris said from the doorway. Neither Danielle nor Walt had heard him enter the attic.
Walt groaned as Chris walked to them. Is no room sacred in my house? I'm just happy to see you were listening to me.
Chris joined them by the window. You two talking about me behind my back now? Danielle asked.
What do you mean now? Chris teased. You've always been our favorite subject of conversation. When did you say you're moving out? Walt asked. In the morning. I've already packed. That shouldn't have been too hard, considering everything you own fits into a pillowcase, Walt scoffed.
I wouldn't say everything he owns, Danielle reminded him. Chris turned his attention to Danielle.
Have you talked to Lucas? He saw Peter Morris being murdered, Walt told him.
Then he knows who did it? Chris asked. I assume Logan Mitchum, since that's whose fingerprint they found out front, Danielle said.
We could always see if your husband will agree to stick around for a lineup, Walt suggested. I'm sure Chief McDonald would appreciate the help.
Lineup? Who would be in the lineup? Danielle asked.
Isn't that obvious? Mitchum. Chris, Walt explained.
Me? Chris frowned. You know I had nothing to do with Peter's murder.
Walt shrugged. So you say.
Oh, stop that, Walt, Danielle chided. You know Chris didn't kill Morris.
I do? Walt asked innocently.
For one thing, when Lucas appeared in the library earlier, both you and Chris were there. Lucas asked me about Chris. If Chris had killed Morris, Lucas would have told me.
Walt shrugged. Maybe. It's possible Lucas didn't get that close a look at him in the library. As I recall, your husband was only there a moment.
Are you forgetting you woke Chris up? You seriously think he killed Morris and then went to bed and fell asleep?
Of course not. But you have to admit it's rather amusing watching Chris get agitated.
Walt smirked. Danielle glanced over to Chris, who looked a little more than annoyed.
What you want to do is slug me, don't you? Walt taunted Chris. How did you guess?
Oh, stop, you two.
He started it, Chris grumbled.
Walt just gets a little bored. You would be too, hanging around the same house for almost a century, never going out. Chris almost reminded Danielle that was Walt's choice, yet instead said,
Fine. Why don't you tell me what Lucas told you about Morris's murder?
After Danielle recounted Lucas's version of the murder, Walt said,
I told Danielle I'd keep an eye on Arlene and David while they're here. Strange. When I went to the bathroom to wash my hands of Morris's blood, Arlene seemed as if she was about to jump out of her skin. At the time, I assumed she was afraid of me. Thought I'd just killed a man.
If she really didn't know Mitchum had killed Morris when she saw him downstairs, assuming Logan Mitchum is the man Lucas saw, then she was probably freaking out at that point, realizing what he had done and how she might be implicated in the murder, Danielle said.
Maybe they planned to murder him, but she didn't know when Mitchum intended to do it, Chris suggested.
But if she's part of this, then why kill Morris while she's staying here? Danielle asked.
Maybe it wasn't premeditated, at least at that moment. They were arguing. Mitchum took out his gun, Walt suggested.
He just happens to have a gun? Danielle asked.
If it was Mitchum, he's a PI, so I imagine he always carries a concealed weapon, Chris said.
Is that legal in Oregon? Danielle asked.
Chris shrugged. I've no idea. Of course he didn't use the gun. What was the knife doing on that shelf anyway? I didn't put it there.
I don't know. According to Lucas, it looked like a spur-of-the-moment decision to use the knife instead of the gun, Danielle said.
I just keep wondering, was this premeditated or did something happen during the argument that turned the situation lethal?
I'll be curious to see what McDonald learns about your guest, Arlene, Walt said.
There's definitely something she's hiding, Chris agreed.
They were all quiet for several moments, considering the turn of events. Finally, Danielle broke the silence and said,
Now please explain what you meant when you said you were glad Walt finally listened to you.
He pointed out earlier that perhaps it might be good for you to take this opportunity and talk to your husband, Walt answered for Chris.
Why? I don't see where we really have anything to say to each other.
I've moved on. Now he needs to do the same.
Are you telling me that when he was killed in that car accident, and you found out about his affair, that part of you wasn't angry, not being able to confront him? To tell him how you felt? Chris asked.
Well, sure, but I've gotten over it.
Danielle, Walt said softly, take this opportunity. It might be your only one. Telling someone how we really feel can be liberating.
23. Chief McDonald pulled up in front of the beach bungalow and parked his car. He sat there a moment and looked around. All was quiet. He hadn't been back to the modest beach house since that day in the fall when he had brought Danielle there to meet Will Wayne and confront the secret of the Gusaroff family. McDonald knew Wayne had petitioned the court to become Karen's legal guardian and had won. The chief wasn't surprised. There was no other family member left to oversee Wayne's ex-wife's care, and while there was a considerable fortune attached to the trust fund paying for her expenses, Wayne had his own fortune and took legal measures to prove his motives were not monetarily motivated. 15 minutes later, McDonald sat in the bungalow's kitchen. It was not quite 9 o'clock a.m. on Valentine's Day.
Karen is still sleeping, Will explained, as he handed a mug of steaming coffee to the chief. She had a rough night. Actually, the last few nights have been rough.
Will took a seat at the kitchen table.
Is it just you taking care of her?
Goodness, no. There's several excellent nurses and caregivers on staff. They rotate shifts. To be honest, I'm just here to oversee her care and make sure she gets what she needs.
He picked up the cane leaning against the table and briefly tapped his leg.
I'm afraid I don't get around too well myself. I've discovered the dampness up here is not the best thing for my leg. I've been thinking about going back to Arizona.
What about Karen?
I'm working on that. I'd like to take her with me if I can work everything out, legally. I'll set her up somewhere, someplace close to wherever I land.
You won't stay under the same roof with her anymore?
Will shook his head.
No. When I first got here, she'd have occasional moments when she'd remember Bobby, that boy I used to be. Of course, she had no idea I was Bobby. But now she's drifted off completely to another place. I realize I'm not getting any younger, and as long as I make sure she's properly cared for and I regularly check on her, then I think it may be time I move on.
She's lucky to have you.
McDonald sipped his coffee.
So tell me, Chief, why are you here?
Did you hear the news?
You mean about Peter Morris's murder?
McDonald studied Will.
I take that as a yes.
I heard it on the radio yesterday. Almost called Danielle, but figured she was probably overwhelmed.
Feel awful for her, having something like that happen right under her roof. Any leads on who killed him? According to the news, you hadn't arrested anyone yet. That's why I'm here.
McDonald set his mug on the tabletop. Will let out a sigh and leaned back in his chair.
I suppose I'm not surprised. Why do you say that? I have to assume Danielle told you how I hired a private investigator after receiving several anonymous calls telling me Morris was responsible for Isabella's death. I'm sure that would put me on top of the suspect list. But if Morris was murdered early Friday morning, as the radio said, I have an alibi. I was here all night with Karen and two nurses. Didn't get much sleep. Like I said, the last few nights have been rough. Can you tell me a little bit about the private investigator you hired?
Will picked up his mug and took a sip of coffee before answering.
Logan Mitchum. What about him? Did he find out anything about Morris in relationship to your daughter's death?
Absently licking his lips, Will set his cup on the table and looked up into the chief's eyes.
He claimed to have evidence Morris had her killed. What evidence?
Will shrugged.
I haven't seen the evidence yet. Not sure if I will.
McDonald frowned.
Why do you say that? I suppose I would have come to you eventually, but I wasn't quite sure what to do next, Will explained. I don't understand. After Mitchum told me he had evidence Morris killed my daughter, I asked to see it, but he told me I'd never get any satisfaction going through legal channels because Morris was so well connected. He suggested I have Morris killed, said if Isabella was his daughter, that's what he'd do. He told you to kill Morris? He didn't suggest I do it myself. Told me he knew someone who could get the job done, but that it would cost me. I told him I wasn't interested in killing anyone. I just wanted to know the truth. He told me to think about it. What was the evidence? McDonald asked.
Will shook his head.
I don't know. He never gave me anything. This was on Tuesday. I considered hiring another private detective. I figured if Mitchum was right and Morris had Isabella killed, then someone in the coroner's office had to be involved. But I didn't want to call Mitchum back, even to ask him to turn over what he claimed to have so far. I felt very uncomfortable calling him because of his offer to find someone to kill Morris. But someone did kill Morris. Yes, but I didn't have anything to do with it. You said you were going to come to me? Danielle urged me to talk to you, after I told her about the phone calls I'd received. She said you had no love for Morris and would happily put him away. But you didn't come to me even after Mitchum offered to have Morris killed. His offer to hook me up with a hitman threw me. But it's not like he offered to kill Morris himself. And this all happened just the other day. To be honest, I found myself more angered at the idea that someone in the coroner's office would take a payoff to cover up a murder. I kept asking myself, should I call another private investigator to look deeper into it? Call Mitchum back and insist he turn over what he had, or call you? What did you decide? I didn't decide anything. Karen's gotten her nights and days confused, and we've been trying to get her to sleep at night. But she's been keeping us up, and then during the day I'm wiped out. Which, to be honest, is one reason I've realized it might be time to get my own place again and let the professionals handle Karen at night. I really don't have the stamina. When was the last time you spoke to Mitchum? That would have been on Tuesday when he offered to find me a hitman. You haven't talked to him again?
Will shook his head.
No. Do you have any idea where he might be? I would assume you could find him at his office in Portland or his home. I can give you his office address and phone number, but I have no idea where he lives. If you ask him about his offer to find me a hitman, I'm sure he'll deny it. How did you happen to hire Mitchum? One of Karen's nurses recommended him.
After leaving the beach bungalow, McDonald drove to the police station. On his way there, he called Brian, updating him on his interview with Will Wayne. When he arrived at the station, he found Brian and Joe sorting through the file boxes confiscated from Logan Mitchum's home and office. The private detective still had not been located.
"You told us to focus on any files on Will Wayne's case," Brian told the chief. "But there's really not much."
"What do you mean?"
The chief sat down at the table with his men.
"Wayne was obviously one of Mitchum's clients," Joe explained. "But aside from a few notes explaining what Wayne wanted him to investigate, there's nothing about the actual investigation."
"Not nothing exactly," Brian reminded him.
"There's a copy of an invoice in the file, which Wayne apparently paid. But aside from that, nothing on what Mitchum found regarding Isabella's death."
"According to Will, Mitchum found evidence Morris had Isabella killed, but he never turned that information over to Will. Maybe he didn't keep case notes in paper files. Perhaps Will find something on his computer," McDonald suggested.
"That might be the case," Joe said. "But I glanced through his other files, and they all include detailed reports on the various cases he's worked on. Notes on surveillances, photographs, all kinds of information. But there is absolutely nothing in Wayne's file."
"Maybe he has it with him," McDonald suggested.
"Or perhaps he destroyed it," Brian said. "Maybe Wayne accepted Mitchum's offer to find a hitman."
"He didn't have to look very far," Joe said dryly. "You're suggesting Wayne is covering for himself, throwing out the story of a hitman since I asked him about Mitchum?" the chief asked.
"If you hire a contract killer and then the cops mention that man by name when discussing the murder, and you realize you've a motive and a connection to the hitman, then yes, it might be wise to toss something out there," Brian said.
"True. But as far as Wayne knows, the only reason I asked him about Mitchum was because he told Danielle about hiring him, and she told me after Morris was murdered and we started looking into people with motives to want the man dead."
"I tell Mitchum realizes he left behind his fingerprint," Joe said.
The chief stood up.
"Keep going through the files. Hopefully you'll find something that'll help us locate Mitchum."
The room's landline telephone began to ring. Brian answered it. When he got off the phone, he looked at Joe and the chief.
"They found Mitchum's car."
"Just his car? Not him?" Joe asked.
Before Brian had a chance to answer, the chief asked,
"Where?"
"Parked a couple blocks from Marlowe House, in an alleyway behind a vacant house."
"How long has it been there?" McDonald asked.
Brian shook his head.
"None of the neighbors remember seeing it parked there yesterday."
McDonald headed for the door.
"Let me know if you find anything."
Just as McDonald was about to walk out of the room, Joe said,
"Well, this is interesting."
The chief paused at the doorway and turned to face Joe, who held an open file in his hand.
"What is it?" McDonald asked.
"Seems Will Wayne is not the only person we know who hired Logan Mitchum," Joe said.
The chief stepped back into the office.
"Who else?"
"According to this file, Heather Donovan is one of Logan Mitchum's clients."
24. Danielle had just stepped out of the shower when she heard,
"Happy Valentine's Day, Danielle."
With a startled yelp, she snatched the towel from its rod, covering herself. Lucas laughed.
"Really, Danielle, you're my wife. No reason to be modest."
"I believe the term is widow," Danielle snapped. "What are you doing in here? I thought you left."
"It's Valentine's Day. Surely you remember."
He smiled. "Yes, I know it's Valentine's Day. So?"
"Valentine's Day was always special for us. It was the day I officially asked you to marry me."
He glanced at her hands.
The only ring she wore on her right hand, a gold setting with an aquamarine stone. Lucas frowned.
Where's your wedding ring?
I took it off after you died.
What did you do with it? He asked.
I gave it back to your mother.
Why would you do that?
It was your grandmother's ring. I thought it should go back to your family.
It was yours, Danielle. Yours to keep. I gave it to you.
Danielle shivered and wrapped the towel tighter around her body. Could you please leave? I'd like to dry off and put my clothes on.
Fine, but I think you're being silly. We can talk after you get dressed.
He disappeared. After dressing and pulling her hair into a French braid, Danielle waited in her room for Lucas to return. 30 minutes went by. When he didn't appear, she went downstairs and found Joanne just coming out of the parlor. Danielle eyed the mop Joanne carried.
Good morning, Joanne.
I cleaned up in the parlor. There was still a little blood on the floor by the sofa, but I was able to get it up. Well, sorry you had to do that. I should have done it myself last night. Nah, don't worry about it. I can't even imagine how horrible it was for everyone, finding Peter Morris in there. Joanne glanced briefly over her shoulder, into the parlor. Plus, I feel somewhat responsible.
Responsible? What do you mean?
Joanne rested the mop handle on the floor and looked down sheepishly. I'm afraid I'm the one who left Chris's knife in the parlor. If I hadn't done that, then maybe whoever killed Mr. Morris would have vented his anger differently. Maybe just sock him in the nose. But to use a knife on him...
You put the knife in there?
I'm sorry. There was tape stuck in the window frame, and I needed something sharp and narrow to remove it with. I didn't want to use one of the kitchen knives, and I remembered Chris's tackle box on the back porch. Then I figured there'd be a knife in there that would work. I didn't think I'd hurt the knife, and I was only going to use it for a minute and put it back. But then I got sidetracked when someone came to the front door. I set the knife down in the parlor and forgot about it. You have no idea how sorry I am. I think we need to tell Chief MacDonald this. I know he's been wondering how the killer got a hold of Chris's knife.
I already did.
Well, actually, I talked to Joe Morelli. He asked me to come into the police station. I'm really sorry, Danielle. I know I shouldn't have borrowed Chris's knife without asking. If you... Well, if you don't feel comfortable about me working here...
Danielle wrinkled her nose and shook her head.
Don't be silly. We've all done something like that before. I'm just happy you told Joe. I know he's had his eye on Chris for this murder, and since Chris's knife was the murder weapon...
Chris, I don't...
Joanne's sentence was cut off when Chris walked into the entry hall and asked,
Did someone call my name?
Morning. Danielle turned to face Chris. I now know how your fishing knife got into the parlor.
I do, too.
Chris nodded toward the woman by Danielle's side.
Joanne explained when she got here this morning.
He smiled. I already made some pancake batter, Joanne told them. As soon as I finish up here, I was going to put the bacon on.
Chris, you are going to have breakfast before you go, aren't you?
That's right, you're leaving this morning, Danielle said. It's going to feel, well, different with you not here.
Hey, you aren't getting rid of me that easy.
I was afraid you'd say that, Walt said when he appeared the next moment.
Both Danielle and Chris flashed Walt a smile, Chris's being more a smirk than a smile.
I stripped the sheets off and put them and my dirty towels in the laundry room, Chris explained.
You didn't have to do that, Joanne told him. But thank you.
Hey, no problem.
Chris grinned.
Well, I better get breakfast on.
Mop in hand, Joanne scurried down the hallway. I'm going to miss you, Danielle told Chris a moment later.
I don't know why you're going to miss him. As he said, just because he's moving out, it doesn't mean we're getting rid of him.
Walt reminded her. And he's just down the street.
That's right, Walt, and I won't just drop by to visit Danielle. I plan to come see you.
Lucky me, Walt said dryly. He disappeared. Danielle glanced around the entry hall. Walt was nowhere to be seen. She looked back to Chris and whispered,
You know, I think he's going to miss you. I believe he rather likes having someone more to talk to than just me.
He has Max and Sadie, and even Bella, for the moment, Chris reminded her.
True, but I've a feeling conversing with animals isn't quite the same thing as human contact.
Perhaps.
Chris glanced around.
Is your husband's spirit still lurking in Marlowe House?
Danielle sighed. I saw him this morning. I don't think he intends to leave until he says whatever he wants to say to me.
If you sincerely want him to leave, then why don't you listen to him?
What? You think I want him to stick around?
Chris shrugged.
Maybe. He was the man you once loved enough to marry. The two of you never had a chance to resolve your issues.
Issues I wasn't even aware of until he died.
Which makes it worse. This is your chance, Danielle. Most people never have the opportunity to confront someone who has died. It's our unique gift.
Gift or curse, Danielle muttered.
I suspect you don't view your friendship with Walt as a curse.
Well, no.
Then use your gift and talk to your husband. Really talk to him. And it's not only for you. It's for him. He probably needs this more than you do.
Since when did you start caring so much for my husband? You don't even know him.
Chris shrugged. I've never been good at walking away from a spirit who needed my help.
Danielle studied Chris for a moment. You mean like Anna?
To me, Anna will always be Trudy, but yes. Although I have to confess my motivation for helping her had more to do with wanting to get her out of my life. In the beginning, I just wanted to help her. But when my efforts didn't seem to be going anywhere, she became more demanding. And after a while, I just wanted to find something, anything, to get her to move on.
I can understand that.
So, what are you waiting for? He asked.
I don't think Lucas is going to come around while anyone is with me. He made that pretty clear earlier.
Then go somewhere where you can be alone. I don't think anyone's in the library, and...
Chris glanced at his watch.
It'll be breakfast pretty soon, so I suspect the rest of the house will be in the dining room before long. Go.
Fine. Danielle sighed. I'll see if he shows up there. 5 minutes later, Danielle sat alone in the library. She was about to call out Lucas's name when he appeared in the room, standing before the portraits of Walt and Angela Marlowe.
I know who he is.
Lucas nodded toward Walt's portrait.
But who is she?
Angela Marlowe. She was Walt's wife.
Beautiful woman.
He glanced from the portrait to Danielle.
Does her spirit haunt this house too?
Danielle stood up and walked to Lucas's side. No, in fact, she conspired to murder her husband. Lucas arched his brows.
Really? And I thought we had some unresolved issues. What happened to her? Was she arrested? Why is her portrait still here? Didn't he want it removed after she tried to kill him?
He didn't know about it before he died. She and her brother planned to kill Walt. But then she died unexpectedly, and her spirit returned to Marlowe House, and she tried to stop her brother from carrying out their plan, but she wasn't able to intervene.
He was murdered by his brother-in-law?
Lucas cringed.
Yep. Loving family, Lucas muttered. I wonder if there's a hell after this, when I finally move on. Will it be to a heaven, or will my sins send me to hell?
I don't believe you're going to hell, Lucas. In Angela's case, she's stuck at the local cemetery. Lucas frowned.
Why the cemetery?
Consider it a cosmic timeout. She's basically under house arrest. Her spirit isn't allowed to move on, nor can she venture outside the cemetery.
What's Walt's story? What did he do wrong?
Walt? Why do you assume he's done something wrong?
He's still here. From what I gathered from Megan, a spirit is supposed to move on. And you just said Angela Marlowe can't because she tried to kill her husband. Then I assume I couldn't move on earlier because I was so confused about what had happened. That was, until Megan helped me come to terms with things.
I suspect in Angela's case she'd be moving on to a much warmer climate had she not tried to prevent Walt's murder.
So there is a hell.
Danielle shrugged. I really don't know. I just know there's something more.
Why is Walt Marlowe still here?
He's not ready to move on yet. This was his home. He will eventually.
Does this mean I can stick around too? That I don't have to move on if I don't want to?
Danielle turned to Lucas and shook her head. No. You need to move on, Lucas. You don't belong here.
You're still angry with me, aren't you?
Danielle sighed. I don't know what I feel, Lucas.
Fair enough.
He turned back to the portrait and studied it a moment before asking,
What happened to our portrait, Danielle?
I gave it to your mother.
I suppose I should be grateful you didn't burn it.
The portrait meant a lot to your mother. Your death was hard on her.
Was it hard on you, Danielle?
When she didn't answer, he said,
We need to talk. I need to explain.
Heather barged into the library.
Who are you talking to?
Danielle glanced to her side. Lucas was no longer there.
Good morning, Heather. I guess I must have been thinking out loud, Danielle lied.
Walking into the room, Heather stared a moment at the spot Lucas had been standing in.
You know, sometimes I really think this place is haunted.
Danielle glanced around uneasily.
Why do you say that?
For a moment there, when I first walked into the library, I thought I saw a man standing next to you. Just a glimmer. And it's not the first time.
Not the first time? Are you saying you've seen this man before?
No, but I've seen another man. Heather pointed to Walt's portrait.
That one.
You've seen Walt Marlowe? Danielle squeaked.
You know I saw Harvey. I even talked to him.
Yes.
You did too. Sometimes I think you like to pretend it all never happened.
It's just something I'd rather forget, Danielle said.
I suppose I can understand, considering you and Lily were almost killed in that fire. But I have a gift. I know I do.
You say you've seen Walt Marlowe. Have you talked to him?
Now you're just making fun of me, Heather snapped.
No, I'm not, honest. But you talked to Harvey.
Well, this is different. With Walt Marlowe, it's just brief flashes. He's there one moment and then gone the next, like with the one I just saw. I think I should probably use my oils.
25.
Let's not, Walt said when he appeared in the library.
Curious, Danielle studied Heather's reaction, waiting to see if she could see Walt. Heather didn't appear to have an inkling his spirit lingered just a few feet from her.
But I'll have to get the oils out when I come back, Heather said.
Come back? Are you going somewhere?
I got a call this morning from Police Chief McDonald. He wants me to come down to the police station again for more questioning. I'm afraid if I don't go now, he'll come here. And frankly, I would rather talk to him down there.
Are you going to have breakfast first? I know Joanne is making it now.
Heather shook her head.
No. Would you mind telling her I won't be here for breakfast?
Heather glanced at the cell phone in her hand, checking the time. I need to go.
She reminds me a little like someone from the Adams family, Brian told McDonald.
The two men stood together in the room adjacent to the interrogation room, watching Heather Donovan through the two-way mirror. She sat alone at the table, absently surfing the internet on her cell phone, while waiting for someone to come in and interview her.
"She does, doesn't she?" McDonald chuckled. "What grown woman goes around wearing her hair in two ponytails?"
McDonald studied Heather for a moment, noting her coal-black hair pulled into low pigtails and the severe bangs cut straight across her forehead. He shrugged.
"It rather suits her." "Might as well get this over with," Brian said, before leaving the room.
A few minutes later, Officer Brian Henderson sat across the table from Heather Donovan in the Frederickport Police Department's interrogation room.
"Thanks for coming down this morning," Brian said, as he opened his folder and shuffled through its papers.
Heather turned off her phone and set it on the table. She looked across at Brian.
"I figured it would be easier to do this down here instead of at Marlowe House."
"It does make it easier on me," Brian smiled.
"What did you want to ask me?"
Brian looked up from his papers to Heather.
"Do you know a man by the name of Logan Mitchum?"
Heather closed her eyes and let out a groan, slumping down in her chair.
"I suppose he called you about me, right?"
"Why would Mr. Mitchum contact us about you?"
Heather sat back up straight in her chair and glared at Brian.
"I imagine because I said that if I could strangle Peter Morris, I would. But that doesn't mean I stabbed the SOB, does it?" "Damn!"
Heather angrily folded her arms across her chest and slumped back down in her chair.
"Whatever happened to client confidentiality? I sure won't recommend Mitchum to anyone."
"Why don't you back up a moment, Heather? Tell me how you happen to know Mr. Mitchum, and then you can explain why you told him you wanted to kill Peter Morris."
Sitting up straighter, she continued to glare at Brian.
"Just because I said I wanted to strangle him doesn't mean I wanted to kill him. It's a figure of speech, for goodness sake."
"Once again, Heather, how do you happen to know Mr. Mitchum?"
Heather let out a sigh and leaned forward, resting her elbows on the table.
"I don't know why you're making me say everything you obviously already know. But fine. I hired Mitchum to investigate Peter Morris."
"Why would you do that?"
Heather studied Brian for a moment.
"You don't know, do you?"
"Go on."
Heather shrugged.
"I hired him to look into Peter Morris and Earthbound Spirits in regards to Presley House. Well, the property, anyway."
"What did Morris have to do with the property?"
"I found out my mother hadn't been paying the taxes on the property. After the house burned down, I assumed I still owed at least the lot. But I found out it had been sold for back taxes, and the new owner was Earthbound Spirits. I spoke to someone over at the assessor's office, and she told me on the QT that something looked a little hinky about it, and she promised to look into it. I decided to hire someone to look into it for me. So I hired Logan Mitchum."
"What did he find out?"
"After charging me more than I could afford, he told me Earthbound Spirits hasn't done anything wrong, that when someone doesn't pay property taxes, that's what can happen. He told me it was nothing personal, that Earthbound Spirits acquires a lot of land this way."
"How did you happen to tell Mitchum you wanted to strangle Morris?"
"After he told me what he found, I thought, well, I suppose I was upset. I really thought I would find out something that would help me get my property back. But according to Mitchum, there was absolutely nothing I could do about it. He told me I needed to simply move on. I suppose I didn't appreciate his advice. Told him I was pissed and that I didn't care if Morris took my land legally, that I still would like to strangle him."
"How did Mitchum react to your outburst?"
"Sort of got the feeling he was used to clients getting upset when he told them something they didn't want to hear. I don't know why he had to run to you the minute he found out someone killed Morris. I don't even see how that's ethical."
"After you got upset with the news, then what happened?"
Heather shrugged.
I left his office, told him thank you for his help. Although, I suppose I probably said that a little snarky, but I was pissed at the time.
How did you happen to hire Mitchum?
Someone recommended him. Claimed he was the best one for my situation.
Someone? Who?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You don't know who recommended Mitchum?
Well, I don't know them personally.
So what are you telling me? You walked up to some stranger on the street, asked them for a name of a good PI, and they gave you Mitchum's?
Of course not, Heather scoffed. It was online.
You mean one of those referral sites like Angie's List?
Absently picking up her cell phone, she fidgeted with it as she explained. No, when I found out who'd ended up with my land, I went online to see what I could find out about the cult. And it is a cult, you know. There had already been so much in the paper, what with Morris's right-hand man killing himself and confessing to a murder and other crimes. It didn't take long to find out I wasn't the only one with a gripe with Earthbound Spirits.
How so?
I came across a forum on cults, and there was an active thread all about Earthbound Spirits. I joined the forum and started talking to other people there, exchanging experiences. That's when I met Colt Curious.
Colt Curious? Brian asked.
Yeah, that's his handle. Or her, not really sure. He sent me a private message. Told me if I was really serious about going after Morris, I needed to hire Logan Mitchum. Said he was a PI who was already looking into the group. Wanted to bring them down, and he'd probably appreciate any new ammunition that would help do that. Said he probably wouldn't even charge me. Of course, he was wrong there.
Wrong?
It wasn't free. But I really wasn't looking for a free private detective. Just one who'd be best for my case. I'd hoped Mitchum would be it.
Do you think he did a poor job?
Heather shrugged in defeat. Probably not. It just wasn't what I wanted to hear. I wanted him to tell me Morris had done something illegal and that he could prove it, and I could get my property back. But that's not what he told me. And since he's not a fan of Earthbound Spirits, I have to assume had he found anything I could have used against the group, he would have told me. But still, to tell you about me is really jerky. Brian was about to ask another question when Heather angrily tossed her phone aside and looked across the table at Brian. Did he give you all his clients' names?
What do you mean?
Did Mitchum hand over his client list, all those poor people who have a legitimate grudge against Earthbound Spirits? While I didn't kill the man, I'm not crying over his death. He hurt many people. I don't think any of those people deserve to be harassed by you.
Heather, I've no intention of harassing anyone.
Boy, I'm going to give Mitchum a piece of my mind, and when I go online again, I'm going to let everyone know what a betrayer he is.
First of all, Mitchum did not say anything about you. In fact, we haven't even talked to him.
Heather frowned. I don't understand. You knew I'd hired him.
He's a person of interest. We're trying to locate him. We came across an invoice he made out to you, which is how we knew of the connection.
She stared dumbly across the table a moment before asking, Are you saying Mitchum never said anything to you about me threatening to strangle Morris?
Brian nodded. Like I said, we haven't spoken to him, but we're trying to contact him. Do you know where we might be able to find him?
Heather shrugged. I met him in his office. Do you have that address?
Yes. Did he ever mention any other place he likes to go? Maybe a favorite restaurant where he meets with clients? A hobby he mentioned in passing? Something?
No, sorry. I just met with him twice. Once when I hired him and the second time when he told me what he'd found. Or should I say, hadn't found.
The night of the murder when Chris stepped out of the parlor, when he was with Morris, you told Chris Danielle was looking for him.
I thought she was.
But you admitted you didn't actually talk to her, that you heard her call out from the kitchen.
Heather shifted in her chair.
Yeah? What about it?
Danielle wasn't in the kitchen, but Chris left to find her, leaving you alone with Morris.
Heather shook her head in frantic denial. No, I didn't tell Chris that to be alone with Morris. I honestly believed I heard her cry out from the kitchen. Sometimes I hear things, well, and see things that other people don't.
I'm not sure what you're getting at.
Heather leaned forward and whispered, I think Marlowe House is haunted.
Haunted?
I've seen Walt Marlowe on a few occasions.
Have you shared this with anyone? Brian asked.
Actually, I told Danielle this morning. Of course, she doesn't believe me. I could tell.
Let's forget about ghosts for a moment. Why don't you tell me again what happened between you and Morris after Chris left him with you?
Nothing happened between us. Maybe he didn't do anything illegal to get my property, but I still didn't want anything to do with him. I didn't want to talk to him, but I certainly didn't kill him.
What did you do exactly?
After I told Chris about Danielle looking for him and how she might be in the kitchen, I admit I expected it to speed up the goodbye.
Speed up what goodbye?
Between Chris and Morris, of course. Haven't you ever noticed when you walk someone out to leave, they linger on and on with inane conversation until you just want to shove them out the door? I figured with Chris knowing Danielle was looking for him, Morris would just leave.
But it didn't work out that way, did it?
26. Danielle was about to step into the front lobby of the Frederickport Police Department when Heather stepped outside. Heather paused and looked at her before stating,
You didn't mention you were coming down here.
Thought I'd stop by and see if there was any news on the murder investigation.
Are you sure you didn't just come down here to find out why they wanted to talk to me again?
Danielle frowned.
No, why would I come all the way down here to ask that when you're living at Marlowe House?
Heather shrugged.
Well, your friend Police Chief McDonald isn't here. Or at least I didn't see him.
I thought that's who called you.
It was, but I spoke to Officer Henderson.
Heather pushed by Danielle.
I'm out of here, going to grab some breakfast.
Bye, Danielle said lamely, watching Heather make her way to the parking lot. After a moment, Danielle gave her head a little shake and made her way inside the building. After being buzzed into the inner offices, she came face to face with Joe Morelli.
Happy Valentine's Day, Danielle, Joe greeted her.
Morning. Any breaks on the case? She asked.
Nothing I can really share at this time, but hopefully we'll have something we can tell you.
Is the chief here? She asked.
The chief won't be able to tell you any more than me, Joe told her.
Danielle smiled. I just wanted to say hi, she lied.
I was hoping you might have changed your mind about going out with me tonight.
Thanks, Joe. I appreciate the offer. But with everything that's going on right now, I can't even think about going out.
Morning, Danielle,
Brian greeted her, walking to where she stood with Joe. Hi, Brian. I see you talked to Heather again this morning.
She told you? Brian asked.
Earlier, she mentioned the chief asked her to come down, and I just ran into her on her way out. But she didn't say why you wanted to talk to her again.
Just routine, Brian shrugged. Rechecking our facts, that's all.
Danielle smiled. I was wondering, is the chief here? Brian told her he was in his office at the same time Joe reminded her the chief wouldn't have anything new to tell her. She smiled at both officers and then politely excused herself and made her way to the chief's office.
She does make herself at home around here, Brian observed dryly. I should probably tell her to wait out front while I check with the chief.
Joe started to follow Danielle when Brian reached out and grabbed him by the arm. Joe paused and looked back at the other officer.
Don't waste your time, Joe. The chief will see her. You know it. I have no idea what's with those two. If it wasn't for Carol Ann, I'd swear they've got something going on. Oh, please, the chief is hardly Danielle's type, Joe scoffed. You're right. I imagine Chris Glandon is more her type.
This is a surprise.
The chief greeted Danielle when she entered his office, closing the door behind her.
We just had your, what is